Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Mayor Bloomberg inserted himself into the campaign to succeed him yesterday. We'll get a reaction from candidate Bill de Blasio in a minute. Without mentioning names, the mayor took a shot at candidates who support a lawsuit against the NYPD Stop and Frisk program and two city council bills that would create an inspector general for the police department and establish new stop and frisk rules.
Stop playing politics with public safety. Look at what's happened in Boston. Remember what happened here on 9/11. Remember all of those who've been killed by gun violence and the families they left behind.
Strong words from the mayor tying 9/11 and Boston and those kinds of risks to the stop and frisk debate and inspector general debate. As for the people making those suggestions?
The attacks most often come from those who play no constructive role in keeping our city safe, but rather view their jobs as pointing fingers from the steps of City Hall.
The mayor thanked Police Commissioner Ray Kelly in his speech and said discussion of racial profiling against the police, charges of that by politicians and the media, miss the racial tragedy of black and Latino kids getting killed by street crime.
When police stop and ask a 17-year-old a question based on a reasonable suspicion of a crime, there is outrage. Yet when a 17-year-old is standing on the street corner near his home at 8:15 in the evening and gets shot and killed, there is silence.
He was referring to 17-year-old Alphonza Bryant shot and killed near his Bronx home last week. There has been scant media coverage. We'll get a reaction to the mayor now and talk about other campaign issues with Democratic hopeful and New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio. Public advocate, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Do you think the mayor was talking to you there?
I think he was talking to me. I think he attacked the New York Times while he was at it. He attacked a lot of people who think that there's a problem right now with the relationship between police and community all over the city. Look, to me, this was nothing short of fear-mongering. And actually, I appreciate the way you mix together those clips, because there's an incoherence to them, linking it to 9/11 and Boston. You know, one, he's all over the map. Two, he's being, I think, motivated by concerns about his legacy more than an honest discussion of what the city is facing. But right now, I think he is fear-mongering. He's trying to get people to think you have to make a choice between security and civil liberties. I think that's a false choice. I think this country is based on the notion that you balance the two. And I think what's happened in the city over the last few years is organic. People in neighborhoods all over the city have decried the overuse of stop and frisk, the violation of their civil liberties, unconstitutional application of stop and frisk. You know, he mentioned reasonable suspicion. No one is complaining about when stop and frisk is utilized appropriately. That's not why we have a federal court case right now on the stop and frisk issue. It's the inappropriate use and the overuse that's the problem, and he hasn't had the decency to acknowledge that his policies went awry and have caused immense collateral damage at the community level.
I believe the tie that he makes to Boston and 9/11 is with respect to the Inspector General bill, which he says any Inspector General might, or the existence of an Inspector General might, dissuade other agencies from sharing information with the police, and that could contribute to missing a terrorist plot. And he says there's already independent oversight with the Civilian Complaint Review Board, so this is just politics.
The Civilian Complaint Review Board has no meaningful power, thanks in part to Mayor Bloomberg. The Inspector General function exists at the following agencies: the FBI, the CIA, and most major police forces in America. And it has not stopped all of them from coordinating in the fight against terrorism. So this is fear-mongering. It's really inappropriate of the mayor to not address these issues seriously.
What about that specific concern about information sharing across agencies if there's an inspector general?
Again, if all of those other entities have that kind of role embedded in them right now and are still able to do their jobs and to coordinate with other law enforcement agencies, that disproves his point right there. We will make sure in the application of any inspector general and in the utilization of it that we are able to do the work of policing. There's no question about that. But the notion that you can't have oversight, he is literally saying additional oversight is unacceptable. In a police department with so many challenges right now that we have, not one, but we've had several federal court cases that ultimately could constrain the ability of the NYPD to make some of its own decisions, and we've seen that happen with other departments around the country, because constitutional protections are not being recognized on a regular basis. And it's poisoning the relationship between police and community, which means the information flow from community to police is being undercut, which means police can't do their jobs properly.
Yeah.
So I just want to say this is he literally has no proof for the charge that additional oversight would undermine our ability to fight terrorism.
New York City public advocate and mayoral hopeful Bill de Blasio. After the mayor spoke, candidate and city council speaker Christine Quinn said she supports the mayor on many of his points, but also supports the inspector general bill. Would you say your position is different from Quinn's?
Exceedingly different. Look, let's be clear. Speaker Quinn has supported the mayor throughout. Her version of policing is just Bloomberg light. She came very late to the dance on the inspector general and does not want as strong a bill as I want. I want an independent budget and clear subpoena powers for the inspector general. She opposes the racial profiling bill, which I think is necessary to right the ship here. We see racial profiling happening every day in neighborhoods around the city. It's not how our police are supposed to work. It's not healthy for the relationship between police and community. It's not constitutional. And so Speaker Quinn has not been willing to break with the mayor on those points, and she clearly wants to continue Ray Kelly as police commissioner. And I have a lot of respect for Ray Kelly, but he's not going to make these changes.
And we will get Speaker Quinn's positions on these things next time she's on as we continue to rotate through all the mayoral hopefuls. Let me also get to some other issues while you're here. You were in the candidates' forums that I moderated recently on housing and environmental issues. And at the housing forum, I was struck by the lack of a bidding war over how many new affordable units you all would propose to create. You remember that when Mayor Bloomberg was running against Mark Green in 2001, Mayor Bloomberg said 60,000, then Mark Green said 160,000 affordable housing units, then Mayor Bloomberg, or then Michael Bloomberg said 165,000, and the mayor is on the verge of completing that number before he leaves office. Well, I see that just this week you have a number.
I do have a number. We believe we can achieve 190 to 200,000 units between new construction and preservation over the next 10 years. And, Brian, I do want to say if you were able to create that bidding war in the past, we should keep you as moderator for all these debates because it'll get more affordable housing to people who need it. So I commend you.
So how are you going to pay for it?
Well, first of all, we would continue a lot of the Bloomberg approach and the capital funding for it. But the problem with the Bloomberg Affordable Housing Plan is it really got us very little net gain in affordable housing. We lost a huge amount to units leaving rent regulation and leaving the Mitchell-Lama program, for example. So that 165,000 was almost entirely offset by affordable units that were no longer affordable. Now, what I would do differently and expand upon the Bloomberg approach, first of all, I'd make sure more of those units were in the outer borough and for a broader income mix than a lot of the Bloomberg plan did. But second, look, I believe in mandatory inclusionary zoning. This is a real difference I have with Bloomberg, and I also have this difference with Speaker Quinn. Mandatory inclusionary zoning says developers can develop sizable buildings, but they must include affordable units. That's the price of admission. We believe that will add an additional 50,000 units of affordability over the next decade. Without it, we simply can't keep up. So it's time for the development community to understand that the rules of the game have to change, and we're going to demand more of them. They'll still have plenty of opportunity to profit. But that's the game changer. The two other key points, the use of our pension fund dollars. We are not investing pension fund money appropriately in our own city. We're not stimulating our economy. We're not building affordable housing. I've called for $1 billion in pension fund money to go that purpose. We can get a good return on investment in the process. And finally, Brian, you and I have seen it. Vacant land all over the city, not being used for housing development, affordable or market or any kind. Why? Because the tax code currently incentivizes vacant land staying vacant.
What about that pension fund proposal? The pension fund has its own challenges, as you know, as public pension funds all over the country. If you're going to use it for a social purpose, like investing in affordable housing, is that the best return you can get for the pension fund dollars? Isn't that best return the responsibility of the mayor and the controller?
Well, it is the responsibility. But first, I can tell you that the affordable housing investments have done much better in many cases than traditional finance industry investments. You know, obviously, there's been a bias in this town with our pension funds to do as Wall Street sees fit, and I think that's been a problem unto itself. But in fact, affordable housing investments have done much better than many traditional investments, and they have huge secondary impacts, both in terms of some economic stimulus, job creation, both short-term and long-term job creation, and most importantly, addressing what is undermining our local economy as much as anything, the lack of affordable housing. Right. So I think you have to use that money for more than one purpose, given the situation we're in.
Bill de Blasio with us. And at the Environmental Forum, I thought it was newsworthy that 8 of the 9 candidates, everyone except Mr. Katsimatidis running for the Republican nomination, said you would want fewer cars in the Manhattan Business District and more bicycle commuting by the end of your first 4 years. So briefly on each, because our time is running short. On the cars, as you know, Mayor Bloomberg lost his battle for congestion pricing to accomplish that goal. Do you have a different method that you think could politically succeed?
Well, I have a different approach in general. I think we have to focus on mass transit, and we have to focus on increasing the number of bike lanes in the places we can put them appropriately. I would implement a bike lane strategy differently from the mayor, because I think he often did it without consulting properly with communities and small business. But I think there's plenty of opportunity to expand bike lanes appropriately. And in terms of mass transit, I mean, as you know, huge swaths of the outer boroughs that are being underserved. I had to fight to keep the G train extension going in Brownstone, Brooklyn. I had to fight to stop them, the MTA, from cutting the shuttle service in the Rockaways, even though train service has not been fully restored. I mean, we've got...
But how much could you do? As you know, it's a huge political, not to mention budgetary thing to build any new subway lines.
Well, it's not about subway lines. I think it's about express buses and bus rapid transit and choosing to address the transit needs of areas that don't have it sufficiently, which is why people are getting in their cars and coming into Manhattan. I think that is the central thrust here. Look, that will take some time, and the first thing we have to do is protect the MTA payroll tax, because that's the bread and butter here. Some have talked about commuter tax and other approaches. Those would be ideal over time. But right now, protect the payroll tax and start to reorient more of the resources to outer borough neighborhoods that are fundamentally unserved. That's how you get cars out of Manhattan.
Do you have any reaction to the new bike share program and how it's being implemented?
You know, same dynamics. I've seen examples where communities did not have the kind of information they needed, the kind of consultation. But I'm hopeful that it will yield a good result. And we've seen some, you know, good examples around the world. So let's hope for the best there.
Single out any areas, you know, the cover of AM New York today that everybody's seeing as they get handed it in the subway is not on my block, having to do with these bike parking constructions.
Again, I think that's the same point of, you know, there are areas where you can put them appropriately and some not, and I don't think there's been a very mindful approach to neighborhood sensibilities. I mean, this is kind of the core of the Bloomberg experience. It's been my way or the highway on many things. Neighborhoods often run over in the process. It does not have to be that way. Government can be consultative with local stakeholders and still move some of these progressive programs forward.
Last thing, before you go, do you want to say anything to dissuade Anthony Weiner from getting into the race? You know, a recent poll says he would enter in second place, which means behind only Speaker Quinn, ahead of the rest of you, not to mention all the media air he would take out of the room. Do you want to try to talk him out of it?
Brian, let me be clear. The Democratic Party electorate is looking for a progressive alternative. I believe I have established myself as that alternative to Speaker Quinn, who clearly wants to continue the vast majority of Bloomberg's policies. I don't know what Anthony's going to do. I mean, it's a hypothetical. I don't want to speak to it. I think right now there are candidates here and now describing very, very different visions for the future of the city, and that's what people are increasingly focusing on. Anthony is a question mark. He'll make his decision in his own time.
New York City Public Advocate and mayoral hopeful Bill de Blasio, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, some of the surprises in the Tony Award nominations and non-nominations. Stay with us.